My name is Bruce Hook. I grew up in a very moral home. My parents are educators, so in my hometown of about 5,000 people, because my mom and dad, my dad was a principal and my mom was a teacher, there was an expectation to live above the law as an exemplary family and all that. And that worked out until I was about 14 and decided that you know, I didn't like that. And so I started rebelling against my parents and their some of their moral standards and what they thought was good and bad. And of course, I got a girlfriend. And ever since I've been about 7 years old, I wanted to be a farmer. And of course, my dad would be an educator and my grandpa a farmer. My grandpa told me when I was about 13 years old, there's only two ways you can become a farmer. One is to be born into it, and the other way is to marry into it. And since I wasn't born into it, I was working on the second phase of that, being married into it. And it just so happened that my girlfriend, her dad was one of the largest landowners in our county, and everything was going good. And I graduated from high school, was working on the future family farm with my future in-laws, and everything was great, except on graduation night of my senior year, my best friend, who had become a Christian months prior to that, had the idea that he would go around and share the gospel of Jesus Christ with all his classmates. There was 139 of us. And since I was his best friend, he waited, I guess, to the end of the 139. I think I was number 139 who got to hear the gospel. And, of course, I didn't understand it, and I didn't really think I needed it. And, plus, it was kind of getting in the way of what I wanted to do with my life also. So I told him I wasn't really interested, and he accepted that. But before he left for college, he said, I'll give you one challenge, Bruce. He says, you know, why don't you read the Bible? And then we can have a conversation about something you know about versus, you know, just blowing smoke up in the air and, you know, not knowing what you're talking about. So I thought that was a fair challenge. I started reading the Bible, and to my surprise, I read the Bible from cover to cover in 4 months. And I just found it intriguing. And after reading the Bible, there were a lot of things there, but two things really came home to me. One was I thought I was a good old boy, but my standard of good was always in a comparison manner. You know, so good was always comparative. I was better than him and not so good compared to, you know, it was always that. But when you read the Bible and see a holy God that is perfect, I'm not that smart, but I figured that one out real quick, that compared to God, there's no way that I was even close. And the other thing, in my town, it's a town of about 5,000 people, 7 churches, and the same people I partied with and had a good time with and was carousing with, they went to church. And so the idea of Jesus Christ and making a difference in the life, you know, I just didn't see it. But when I read the Bible and saw that the Bible demanded a response on my part to who is Jesus Christ, then that's when the wheels came off of my plans, so to speak. And 6 months later, because I'd read the Bible, I found out that some of the things I was doing with my girlfriend and the way I was living probably should change. So I started changing. And, of course, she did not like that and basically gave me an ultimatum. If we're going to continue on with the idea of marriage and that, you know, you're going to have to set this God thing aside. And that hurt, because now what do you do? And so I'm in this debate with myself how to continue on my dream of being a farmer and following Jesus. And it always didn't mean one or the other, but in my case it was. And so I was going to her house, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to continue on with her and kind of set God aside. And in the morning of that day that I was going to talk to her about where we're going to do with our relationship, I'd read Matthew 9:36 through 38. Anybody have that memorized or know that? It says, it's where it says, the harvest, it says, when Jesus saw the the multitudes, he had compassion upon them, for they're like sheep without a shepherd. And he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, I ask the Lord of the harvest to send laborers into the labor field. And I'd stop on this country road, and I'm between a corn on my right and beans on my left. And that's what I wanted to give my life to. And it was like God saying, there's a bigger harvest than beans and corn. And it was people. And so I went up to my girlfriend's door, and to my surprise, I said, you know, I guess this is, we're going to have to call it quits. And, of course, that created another crisis in my life, because I was pursuing my farming dream and had rebelled against my parents about, you know, studying hard and getting prepared for college. You know, that was one of the issues of our family, being from an educator's family. That was a tension point. And I found myself enrolled in college, and to my surprise, went to college. And there I met the Navigator organization, and a guy took interest in my life and started building into my life. Actually, he played racquetball, and I played racquetball. And so really our discipleship time was on the court and then after the court and to the court. And he built into my life. And he still is one of my mentors today, and I'm very thankful. So, but the big thing, I share that in a sense of my story. I think of how each of us has a story to tell. And more importantly, God is writing a story in each of our lives, in and through our lives. And so, and everybody has a story how to tell how God is working in his life or her life. And the other thing is, I see is your personal testimony can be used to encourage those who are either seeking God, the unbeliever, or to encourage those who are believers. So you can adapt a testimony to the situation that you're living. And so what we're going to try to do, I don't know if I can get this thing to work. It was working earlier, but if it doesn't, it's no big deal. I won't be sad. And so like I was saying, just kind of God's writing a story in and through each of our lives. Everyone has a story to tell how God's worked, is working their life. And you can adapt your testimony to the audience in which you're speaking to. And that's why I think it's one of the most effective tools in the toolbox. What I'd like to do, just in kind of to open it up, what I'd like to do is somebody could read 1 John 1 through 4. And as we think about preparing and sharing your testimony, think about how this passage would apply to that. Or what is it saying in response to your personal testimony? Somebody could read that? 1 John 1, 1 through 4.
That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we looked upon and have touched with our hands concerning the word of life. The life was made manifest, and we have seen it, and testified to it, and proclaimed to you the eternal life, which was with the Father, and was manifest to us. That which we have seen and heard we proclaim also to you, so that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed our fellowship is with the Father and with the Son, Jesus Christ. And we are writing these things so that our joy may be complete.
As you hear that, what strikes you about what would be applicable to sharing your personal testimony? What's John saying?
So you want to talk about what they've seen or what they've heard? That on.
And he's just passing it on, right? He's testifying to it. And so he's just telling what we've seen, what we've lived, we pass on to you. In the next verse, if somebody could read 1 Peter 3:15. How might that apply to what we're learning today about preparing and sharing your testimony?
Give an account.
And how does it start out? Be prepared, though.
Be ready.
And a lot of times when it comes to personal testimony, and I'm going to share this later, we're going to actually work today, so get ready. And what I find is a lot of times we've never taken the time to think about how we might do that. So one of my desires is that we get prepared today. And hopefully it will be helpful in that sense. 1 Peter 4:11.
If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen.
How might that apply? Or what's it saying?
Speak with authority.
Speak with authority, yeah. It's my story. What my friend Jay shared with me some 27 years ago is real. He did that. And nobody can deny that. And so the idea of speak with authority, speak with confidence. We don't have to be ashamed of what God has done. And then the last one, Ephesians 4:15 and then 29. 4:15 and then 29.
But speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things into him who is the head of Christ. The corrupt word proceed from your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers.
So there's two things there. The first one, in love. With authority, but with love. And then last one?
Build up,
right? A lot of times, you know, at least in my world, in the business world, you know, we talk about people and we tear them down. And my testimony should be geared so that it's edifying and it builds people up. So that when they listen to it, boy, I can identify with that guy. You know, he went through the same crap I'm going through. And so it becomes a, you know, it testifies to their situation. So as we think about your testimony, you can change it. I could have said very easily versus telling you about my desire to be a farmer. I could have said, you know, that commercial, this Bud's for you. I really thought Budweiser just made a beer for Bruce, you know. I was that conceited. And I could go off on that. I could arrange it, however, because that's true of me at that time. You know, I thought Budweiser made one beer for me, you know, at that time. And that's how conceited I was. And then I could talk about being conceited and how that messed up my life and ruined relationships or whatever. You can adapt your testimony because it's your life and what you've lived and what you've seen and what you've gone through. So we're going to look at it in that sense, okay?
Similarly, I think it's also playing on Peter, 1 Peter 4, is that God should be the hero of the story. God should be the glory. It shouldn't be a eulogy about my sin and how much regret I wish I had or how great I used to be or something. Sometimes that's going to distract the person. It's not
going to
be the
focal point. Exactly. And purposely, when I shared my story, I left something out. And hopefully you'll be able to tell me after we get done what I left out. So I left something out on purpose. And hopefully you'll pick it up at the end. And hopefully see what I was trying to do, okay? So I give you that heads up. As I thought about sharing your testimony, I thought, well, you know, we come to Keymans to learn about the vision of discipleship. Well, where does this fit into that process? And more importantly, where does it fit into discipleship in general? And so I wanted to go back to Matthew 28:18 through 20. If somebody could just read that, if you have it memorized, go ahead.
Jesus drew near and said to them, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Go then to all peoples everywhere and make them my disciples. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, and I will be with you always to the end of the age.
And that's, become known as the Great Commission. And it's great because it has two things, because of its scope and because of its task. And when I talk about that, the scope, all nations, that's pretty huge. We live in Latin America, and Leon, the city I live in, is about 2 million. It seems pretty big just where I live. But God's got on his heart the nations. And so that's why it's the Great Commission. The scope of it is to all nations. And then the task is pretty immense too, no? Teaching them all that I've... basically, everything that Christ taught, we're to go and teach others. Well, that's pretty big too. So the Great Commission is the Great Commission in that sense for me. And so how does the testimony fit into that? Hopefully by the end of the day we'll see how it can be a valuable tool and something that can help us get people to at least the opportunity to get a hearing for the gospel and hopefully build into their lives in the future as a disciple. But as we think about ourselves, and I put it verse 18. Could you read verse 18 again? I think this is the key to success.
He drew near and said to them, I have been given all authority in heaven and earth.
So that's the key to me for the Great Commission. Jesus has been given all authority, and it's on his heart. So at the end of that, he says, and I'll be with you. So it's his show, and he accompanies us as we go and be obedient, participating in what he has on his heart. Any questions up until there? We okay? So if you want to comment or, you know, stop, just let me know. So he says, go and make disciples. Okay, well, let's look at that. For me, if you look at Matthew 4:19, Jesus said, come follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. So a biblical disciple for me personally, and everybody has their own definition maybe, but for me there's three elements that are key. One is one who is following Jesus Christ. He is Lord of my life. That would be the first essential. If somebody could read Luke 9:23 and somebody else John 8:31, I'd appreciate it. Real quick.
Then he said to them all, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me.
So he's following Christ. And then John 8:31. So, abiding in him and in his word. So we're following Christ. The second thing that I see that marks a disciple, one who's being changed by Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians 5:17, therefore if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. All things have passed away. Behold, all things new have come. So we're being changed. And this is where I believe the testimony fits in. It's an opportunity to share with people how Jesus and God has changed in my life. And it can be either geared toward a testimony of salvation or conversion, how that happened. Or like I said, it can be adapted to what I'm going through as a believer in Jesus Christ, as I follow him. And then the third thing that I see is one who's committed to the mission of Christ, which is making fishers of men. The mission of Christ is to save the lost world, the message or ministry of reconciliation. 2 Corinthians 5:19 and 20.
Now all things are of God, who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ, and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, not imputing their trespasses to them, and has committed to us the word of reconciliation.
So
now that, okay, 20. Now that we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us, we implore you on Christ's behalf be reconciled to God.
Isn't that exciting? We get to be part of that part of reconciling the world to Christ, and it's done through what Christ has done in me. And that's where my personal testimony comes in. So for me, three marks of a disciple is one is following Christ, one is being changed by Christ, and one who is busy about Christ's mission or ministry, which is reconciliation of men to himself. And that's where we get to be a part of. And that's exciting to me. And as I mentioned, your personal testimony can be one of many tools. You know, it'd be great if we had a whole week because we could then go to, you know, how to memorize scripture, and we could go to how to share the bridge, and we just go down and all that. But for me personally, the thing that I've had the opportunity to do most out of all the disciplines that one could probably gather has been the opportunity to share my testimony. When we landed in Costa Rica, of course, I didn't know Spanish. And the first thing I did is learn my testimony in Spanish. I figured, because everybody was like, what are you doing here? Well, I'm studying language. Well, why are you doing that? And so they would ask these questions, and I would just go right into why I'm here. And, you know, I study, and I would say, you know, one of my desires is to share with people the good news of Jesus Christ and how to have a relationship with God personally. And, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if they even understood half of it, but they would kind of like, wow, that's amazing. But some of those people today, I was just there about 3 months ago. One of the guys that I shared my personal testimony with, it's been 24 years ago. When he found out I was coming to Costa Rica, he went to share because he says, you know, I've been thinking about that for 18 years, Bruce. And 2 years ago, somebody invited me to a Bible study, and I remembered you sharing your testimony. So I went. And he heard the gospel and responded. And he's a famous music artist, a singer. And it's amazing what God is doing, you know. But it was a testimony, according to him, Arnaldo, is his name, Arnaldo Castillo, 20-some years ago. He heard my testimony, and he'd been thinking about it. He said, I couldn't get that off my mind. So when they invited me to this Bible study, so God can use so many things, but it was a small little story in probably broken Spanish that he thought about for 18 years. That kind of just shows how big God is and how a testimony can be effective. So what I like to do, I thought it would be fun because we got limited time. How about we do this? How about we just split the room down? Y'all read Mark 5, 1 through 20. And if this side could read Acts 2 through 29. Just kind of read it yourself, and then I want to look at the comparison. For those who read Mark 5, who's the character, or who's the players in the story?
Jesus and this demon guy, his mom, called himself a leper.
And what was his life like?
Wild.
He's a wild thing. The Tasmanian devil. I mean, it says they couldn't chain him down. And that's pretty violent. And so we can see. And all I want to do is just look. His life before he met Christ is crazy. How about Paul? What was he like?
He was a persecutor of the church. He was a righteous Pharisee.
And we could read in other parts of the Bible a little bit more about his curriculum. But he wasn't a wild thing, right? I mean, on one side we have the wild thing, and then we have the pious religious guy, right? And we see in both cases their life in verses 1 through 5 and then 4 through 11, how the, I don't know how you pronounce it, but the guardian or Gerasen, or there's a lot of names, but the demon-possessed guy, how his life was before Christ. Wild thing, religious, right? And then what happened to the wild thing? So he had an encounter with Christ, right? And how about Paul? What happened? He's walking down, and boom, he's blinded, it says. And so we can see in both instances how they're laying out how their life was before they knew Christ, the encounter that they had with Christ, and then what happened to the wild thing. And where did he go?
Well, he stayed there. The demons were driven out and put into a herd of pigs that were thrown down into the lake. And then he asked if he could go with Jesus. And Jesus said no.
He went to that. There's a word
ten
there.
Cities.
Huh?
Ten cities,
right? He went to 10 cities and shared his what Jesus had done for him. How about Paul? So their lives were changed, and then they tell what happened since then, right? Now, I shared my testimony, right, my story with you. What part of that did I leave out?
The last part, yeah.
The encounter, right? Because when I was sitting on that road with the bean field and corn field, what I didn't say is for the first time, in that verse, Matthew 9:26, I had read in the morning. That was the first time I ever remember asking God to be my personal Lord and Savior. That's when I invited Him. And I had no clue. I thought I was talking to the roof of the car at that time. But what happened at that time was a peace came into my life that I still carry with me today. I left that out just because as I look at these two examples as they're laid out, you see the life. And what's neat about it, you know, some people, and some of you might have some, you might be like the wild thing, crazy and, you know, just extreme this way. And others might have been guys who've gone to church all their life. And then each of it's equally value and it's a valid testimony because it's my testimony. Paul did not have the same experience of a changed life as a demon-possessed man. But both of them had an encounter with Christ and then they went on and were used by Christ. And so what I'd like to do for the remaining of time, I got a few things, but I really think, like I said, I wouldn't have done this if I didn't believe in just the power and the effectiveness of my personal testimony and how I've seen God use it. What I'd like to do is just give you some practical matters, and they're written down for you in the handout. But I think they're worth looking at together. And what I'd like you to do is we're going to actually take time to write out our personal testimony. And if you've never done that before, you might just get a start on it today. But what I'd like to do personally, and I really believe that this is important, if you would give me your email address, and let's say you don't get it done today, but I'll commit to writing each of you within the next 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it takes. But what I like to do is interact with you to get this done. I have my own personal testimony written out, and I also have it, I don't want to say memorized because it can change it, you know, depending on the situation. But I have an idea of what I want to say. And what I like to do is have you all work on that, because as I was preparing for this, I caught a guy that I had heard about. His name's Ron York. He's in Idaho. And Ron's a great guy. He's about 78 years old. And he was reading Mark 5 some years ago, and that whole thing, he went to 10 cities. And he thought, well, there's 10 cities. So he started praying and asking God, and he went and shared his testimony with people in 10 cities around where he lives. And he mailed it out to other friends. And he said, man, the response that I got has just been tremendous. And the opportunities that he's had now to share Christ in a natural way. because it's very non-threatening. And that's why I'm saying those first four verses were key for me to share with you, because especially Ephesians 4, sharing it in love, but also to edify people. It's not about me. It's what Christ did in me. And that's what the point is. So I'd like to start on that today. If we don't get it done, that's okay. If you'll give me your email, we can interact. You can mail it in. I can help. Or I can send it to Ron, because he's even better than I am. And I really believe that God would use this in a big way in your life, because it's something, like I say, just 4 weeks ago, a guy came in. I sell concrete equipment in Mexico, and the guy was not happy, because what he did was he bought a bunch of stuff from the United States, and he wanted it shipped to his broker at the border, and then he is going to import it. And it was pretty good order. And of course, when you're in sales and you live on commission, you like big orders, and that's always a good thing, right? Well, he called me and he says, "Hey, I need a favor, brother." He didn't call me brother. He called me Bruce. He called me other things later. But he said, "Could you, the way we do invoicing, is you get an invoice, but also to prepare things at the border, you send what they call a performance invoice. It's different than a legal invoice. All it does is say what you're shipping and how much it costs." He said, "On that performance invoice, could you make the amount of, or the value amount of the machinery that I'm importing, like half of what it's worth? Because that way, when he imports it into Mexico, he pays 15% only on the value of that performer, right? So he's wanting to save 15% on half the order." And I said, "I can't do that." "Well, why not?" And I said, "Well, I said, do you want a real reason, or do you, or, you know, what are you looking for?" He says, I said, "Why are you asking why not?" He says, "Well, you know, nobody's going to know." I said, "Yeah, I know." And he started cussing me out. And he said, "Why can't you do it? You tell me." I said, "Well, one, if I get caught, you know, I go to jail. It's a federal crime at that time, because you're crossing country borders, or country borders, yeah. You're passing merchandise into. So by law, I can't do it." But I said, "More important than that, I'm not going to lie." And he says, "Why not?" I said, "Well." And I said, "Well, take 5% of the value of what you're buying. That's how much I'm going to get." And he added it up, and it was like $3,200. I said, "Is $3,200 worth losing the blessings of God on?" He says, "What?" I said, "Yeah, I really believe if I lie, steal, and chill, I won't have God's blessing in my life, because he has told me in his word that that's just not good." So I got cussed out again. And he hung up the phone on me. And, well, I lost that sale. You know, bye-bye commission and the whole deal. Well, 2 weeks later, he calls me. Oh, no, here we go again. This guy's going to cuss me out again. Boy. So I kind of hold it, getting ready for his screams, you know. And he says, "Can you come?" And Reynosa's about a 10-hour drive from me. "I want to talk to you. I want to meet you. I want to know who you are." And I said, "Well, wait a minute." I said, "You know, is this the same guy that just cussed me out 2 weeks ago?" He says, "No, I haven't slept for 2 weeks." He says, "I've never met a guy that really takes that Bible," he called it crap. He said, takes that Bible crap serious. "I want to meet you." And so I drove 10 hours and met him. And I had the opportunity to share my testimony and share the gospel with him. And he made a decision to know Christ over a stupid little, and that's a testimony. So I'm just sharing with you things that happen every day in my life and how God gets the glory. Because all I did is tell him, and I wasn't trying to offend the guy, I can't do it. And when he pressed me, I told him really why I couldn't do it. I didn't want to lose God's blessing. I really believe God's not going to honor me lying and stealing and falsifying documents. And so that's two examples of how, you know, your testimony can be effective in the sense of share what's going on in your life. And we all have struggles, don't we? Am I the one? I could go into my kids, and that's a whole another. But what I'd like to do is look at the page that says Practical Manners, and it could I'll put it up here. And Royce, could you read the first one? You got it on your sheet. You can either
pray for insight on what God would like you to share.
I think that's very important. You know, what is? How could I do my testimony in a way that would be effective, be loving, and so that, you know, I'm telling, testifying to Christ and what He's done. Second one.
Yeah, your testimony is important. If it's important to you, it will become important to others, people.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, it's not very important to us. And so if it's important to you and you take time to prepare it, importance, then it will become important to other people because you'll be ready to share it. And it's a lot of fun to see how God uses that. The other one?
Keep your testimony short. There may be times for expanding it. You should be able to share your testimony between 3 and 5 minutes.
You know, you don't want to bore people. And, you know, that's easy. I'm a storyteller. And I live in Mexico, and Latins, they're long-winded. And I ask a guy once his testimony, this is truth. And I think we started about 7 o'clock at night, and I think about 2 in the morning he finally finished. And it was very interesting, but I forgot half of it. But it was worth listening to, because he wanted to go back until, you know, his grandmother who prayed for the family. You know, we went from like two grandmas back all the way to present. And it was very interesting. In most cases, that won't be the opportunity that we get. A lot of times, it's a 3 to 5 minute shot, an opportunity to share what's going on in my life with people. Next one, somebody could read it.
Keep your testimony to the point. You're simply sharing what Christ has done in your life. The simple details of your experience relate to what happens in the heart, in your heart.
So keep it to the point. You know, because hopefully, with that person, you're trying to build a relationship, and because a lot of times, like, and you'll see on the list below, there's a lot of avenues that you can prepare it for. Because, like I say, I could tell you about my kids and how I failed, and that really relates to guys who are into parenting. You know, kind of like, here's a guy that loves the Lord, but look at the problems he has, and look at how God has helped him through this and given him. And so, you know, you can start picking and plugging in your life experiences, but getting the format down. I came to Key Men's, like I said, in 1986, and the first I've been a Christian, I think, for 4 years, and the guy that gave the testimony made us write it out, and I'm so thankful to him today. And like I say, hopefully we'll get there. I'm hurrying here. Next point.
As you prepare your testimony, carefully consider your words. Use language people understand. Avoid religious jargon. Use word pictures to tell your story.
I changed that, but that's fine. And then the next one.
Testimony is to help you put into words some of the important, interesting details of your conversation, personal relationship with Jesus.
Yeah. Did we read about the jargon, Christian jargon?
Yeah.
Okay. Christian jargon does not fly in the world that I live in. They don't understand a lot of terminology that we use amongst each other. And frankly, a lot of us don't understand when we're using it. But we get an idea of what they're talking. But try to avoid religious talk. Keep it down to language that they can understand versus, like they understand peace came into my heart versus the Spirit of God, you know, gave me a peace. Well, you and I think as believers know where that peace comes from. We don't have to educate them on Bible doctrine, or, you know what I'm saying? So try to avoid that. And then the next one.
Generalize so that you have a broader audience and identify, avoid using specific denominations or churches.
Yeah, a lot of people, especially in Latin America, because the people that I live and work with are probably about 95% Catholic, using denomination and church only puts up red flags and tunes you out. if you've had a bad experience with a Baptist or a Methodist and you use that, you've just tuned people out, you know, in a matter of seconds. So try to keep it personable and keep generalizations or specific denominations or church groups out of it, in a sense. Later on, if they ask what that was, great. You can get more specific. But what we're trying to get is how to be effective in sharing my testimony to a broader audience. And then avoid bragging or negative remarks. And if you can use humor, go for it. People like to laugh, I found out. And since a lot of this, like I say, a lot of things that have happened in life are pretty humorous. They weren't humorous when I was going through it. But now that I look back, we can make a joke about it. And so people like that. So those are just some things. And then I put here, we all have areas of in our life that Christ has given us victory or is in the process of changing for His glory. There are just a few topics to help us get started when we consider. And I just put it out here, you know, the desire to be in control. There's loneliness, drugs, alcohol, sports. We've all probably had something happen. I just put these to kind of get us, to help us think about what I would like to share and when I write out my testimony. So these are just some maybe things that would help us. So, for example, health challenges. My best friend, as first guy I ever had the privilege of helping in the Christian life, he's my age and he's training for a triathlon and had a pain in his side and ended up being his appendix was about ready to burst, so they took it out. But when they took it out, they noticed there's a gel, and they biopsied it, and of course it came back that he has cancer. It's a rare type of cancer. But long story made short, as they say, he went in for operation. They thought they caught it early. They ended up taking out 7 organs of his body, including his large intestine. You take out any more of this guy, he will not live. And the doctors basically gave him 3 months. And 3 years later, he was supposed to be here with me, but he had to go in for a checkup at the clinic. It's every 6 months he gets checked, but doctors don't have an explanation for this guy. And so he's got his testimony around how God has worked in this situation. I tell you, he's being asked to get up on national platforms by the hospital because all these doctors gave him 3 months and he's still kicking hard, and he makes no bones about it. They ask him to be their spokesman. But he said, I'm going to do it my way. And they said, you share whatever you want. So he's on the traveling circuit sharing about this illness. Of course, it's weekends and doesn't get paid. He's still being vice president of the company he owns and so forth. But so he's got his testimony around an issue that's very prevalent. It gets people's attention. So whatever or wherever you've been, the idea is to think about what you could use to get started. So on the back pages, the rest of the time, think about how to get started, and I put the categories. So if you just read that real quick.
My life before Jesus, how I realized I needed Jesus, how I received Jesus, after, how Jesus makes my life meaningful.
So with the remaining time, we got about 10 minutes. All I'm asking is to get started. And like I say, hopefully if you give me your email, I'll follow up on this, because I really think if you don't do this, you probably won't do it after today. It's one of those things where a lot of, yeah, that was good and okay, that was meaningful, but what'd you do with it? And so what I'd like to do is follow up with each of you and help you get this thing so it's written out. And then once it's written out, then it's just a matter of sharing it. And hopefully we can interact and we can you know, I always challenge the guy that gave the workshop in 1986. He says, after you get it written out, and he did the same thing for me, he helped me kind of organize it and looked at the wording and stuff. It wasn't, there's no passing grade or failing grade. It was just, and then he challenged me to go out and share it. And I did, and wow, it was a lot of fun. So it was like having to, like it's a new little toy to go out and play with in the sense of, so because I didn't realize, boy, people respond to this. So that's my desire to help us in that. It's okay? So take about 10 minutes, and then, like I say, I'll pass around a piece of paper with your, if you write down your email and so forth. I'd love to correspond with you on this and try to help you. Just one last note. Some people, what's interesting, I find as you write your testimony, I've done this before, and people come to the conclusion that I've never made a decision to know Christ. And so if that's you, and I'm not saying that's anybody here, but if that's you and you'd like to talk about that, I'd love to talk to you about that too. So I just say that because my experience has been I don't want to assume anything. That would probably be bad on my part. So if take 10 minutes, 15, what we got left here, and start working on it. If you have any questions, just ask, because I'm here to help.
One of my questions is, like, your testimony, it seems like you talked about, you know, before, and you talked about, you know, when the process, like, when you ask the Lord in your life, but you didn't expand too much on the after part, like, what has been going on, you know, since then.
All I shared was peace of God came into my heart,
yes,
which I carry to the day. And,
yes,
and then from that, I would carry on the conversation. Because what I'm trying to do is just tell people how I got involved with following Christ. And so I could have shared about how, you know, I graduated from college, and I shared a little bit about being involved with Navigators and getting helped and discipled. So you can go from there for wherever you want. But the idea wasn't my testimony so much as just to get people's interest in, okay, well, what's that mean? And because how I use it, and that's why I put sharing Christ in a natural way, is to begin a conversation. And sometimes when I'm on a plane, people ask me, why are you reading your Bible? Well, then I can. And so I've already given them the answer before I share my testimony, because I'm sitting there reading my Bible, so stuff like that. So, and I didn't expand on it. You're correct. I just wanted to share three.
Is that the way you suggested, then, don't really expand on it?
No, you can expand on it as much as your audience. You know, for this, because time is limited, I just wanted to share. Okay, peace of God came to my heart that day. I carry it with me today. Okay. And then we could talk afterwards. You say, well, how'd that happen? And I could go into more detail. But what I'm trying to do is just a testimony. Like I said, you can expand as much or as little as you think the audience and, or who you're sharing with. Because a good friend, you know, who knows you, already probably has witnessed evidence of why you like you are, stuff like that. Does that make sense? So,
there's something that you shouldn't share and something you should share?
I'd say it depends on the person you're sharing with. You know,
okay.
For example, if it's somebody that I'm just in my motive, for example, somebody I'm never going to see him like on an airplane, may never see him, you know, they don't know no gory details, but if somebody that I live with or was my best friend growing up, they know more about me than that person, so you could adapt it to what their, the confidence level or the trust level that you have with that person. Because there's some things, you know, you wouldn't want to share. For example, one of my best friends had an addiction to pornography. You know, he didn't go into great details about, but he is honest. It wrecked my marriage and distorted my view of what, you know, my role was, you know. And then as he, in this case, one of the guys, he's helping, he went into more details with him because he was struggling with the same thing. So,
right.
You know. But
and see, that's the reason I ask that, because, you know, if I don't share, then what if I'm, the part that I'm not sharing is what that person needs to hear?
Then that's why I always, you know, that's why I proceeded with the four verses, be prepared, love, edify. So it's knowing, you know, and God's leading, because some people I've shared more than I should.
Right,
I thought,
exactly.
but at the same time, it ministered to them. So, is, you know, I don't know if there's a, like a, you know, a, what do you call it? My Spanish is coming in here. A patron. There's no rigid way to do it. What I wanted to do is try to just help people to get it written out, and then you can adapt it and go deeper or less. Less information depending on how much time you have and who you're talking to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
If we can correspond, because I got some other stuff that I can share on, you know, the know-hows, you know, because some people, for example, the wild thing versus Paul. Some people think, well, if I got converted at an early age, I don't really have anything to share with anybody. My wife came to know Christ at age 5. But she's got a powerful testimony because she can share how she came to it and how there's been times when she's walked away from that in her high school years, but God still was working in her life, and how she got to fill her childhood dream, what she asked God she could be, it was to be sent to the mission. But, you know, and that would be good with a Christian, but to another audience, she thinks, well, you know, I don't have much of a testimony to share. Well, it's my story, and it's the only one I get.
Right.
So I can only share what my testimony is. And like I say, that I put those needs up there, or I call them felt needs, because most of us can probably dial in on 3 or 4 of those easily. And so, once you get the format and written out, then it's just a matter of plugging in scenarios or life events, you know, according to the needs of what you feel that needs to be said. But a lot of times, you know, I don't know what to say, and I'll have the opportunity and I'll share about, you know, being conceited and all that. And, you know, a lot of people identify to that, you know, because I was really into myself. And Christ has seen that really my satisfaction is giving my life for others, and that's really where I get fulfilled now.
Right.
And they're kind of like, what? So,
how did that happen?
Yeah, and so then it's usually a follow-up question. Well, how'd that happen? Well, and then I can share, well, I've been in the Word, and, you know, that leads. And so I look at it as initiating the conversation and have an opportunity to speak into their lives. So, good question. We got about 5 minutes, and I just want to first thank you. Hopefully something I shared was helpful. And like I say, if you'll sign that, your name and email, I love the correspondence. So if you get an email from B-Hook, don't delete it, it's me. and we can, in any way I can help. But what I say is, if you don't get it written out, and like I say, I have a lot of time. I'm a business guy in Mexico, and I had opportunity in my emails. A lot of my customers will be going through an issue, and since I have it written out, I can cut and paste and adapt it and fit it right in. And so I have opportunity to share it through written means as well as sharing it in person or through mouth. So So I always like to help people get your testimony written out. And I say, if I can help do that, love to correspond with you on that. And hopefully it'll be helpful. And like I say, I found it's probably the most effective tool that I have in breaking open an opportunity to share Christ with others. Because it usually speaks to something they're going through. And it usually leads to, why don't you tell me about that? Or how that happened. And so then you go in more detail. So does that make sense? And you just pass it up. Have you signed that? Or? And fill out the yellow card, please. Yeah, Gancho Hook. Yeah, that's my email. I put it at the bottom there.
Is it your nickname or something, Gancho?
It's Hook is Gancho in Spanish. So,
oh, okay.
So it's, you had to have something. That was mine. But like I say, I'll follow up with you, so if you get an email, because I really would like to see that everyone get it written out, and as a follow-up, I think it would be a practical tool that you can have.
Hey, Gancho, I just think that's almost like Gancho.
Yeah. No, Gancho is Hook. This is a true story. When we got to Mexico, they told us that it was going to take about a week to get a washer and dryer and a refrigerator. So the first thing I bought was a washer, dryer, and refrigerator. And they told me they'd bring it next Monday, a week, between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. So I had things to do. My wife stayed at home, and I came home about 2 in the afternoon. And I said, did anybody come? Because they said they were going to be here today with the refrigerator and washer and dryer. We had 3 little kids at the time, so please get here. And she says, no, but a guy came by looking for Paco. And I said, honey, I'm Paco. And what happened is when I went to Sears, the salesman, he said, what's your name? And I said, Bruce. Como? And he said, what? Bruce. Como? And after about 4 of them, I just said, just put down Paco, you know. Yeah, that worked. And so my wife, the guy comes, you know, with the washer dryer, looking for Paco, and she says, hey, you know, we just rented the place. Maybe the guy that rented the place before us was named Paco, but there's no Paco. So I had to go back up to Sears and wait till the next day because they couldn't find Paco. So my wife always says, who did you tell him? Who's your name today, Bruce? So, anybody else not get their email? Did you get it? So I have several names, and my middle name is Edward, and I use that sometimes because the nickname for Edward is Lalo. So the Domino's Pizza people have Lalo, and of course I informed her of that, so we're okay. But
do you learn Spanish down there, or did you learn it up here before you went down?
No, if you don't mind, I'll share. I'm a storyteller, but.
Well, just because I'm not good at it. I speak a little bit, not very good at all. But I learned from some Mexicans, and they teach you, it's kind of like Spanish.
Yeah.
It's not how they teach it in school.
No, pocho. Pocho is pocho. But my first day, I went to Costa Rica first, and this is 24 years ago, and I didn't know a word of Spanish. And I lived with a family that didn't know a lick of English. And what happened was I got there on a Saturday, and Sunday they showed me how to get to school. And they did it all by, you know, get on the bus and ride the bus and then get off the bus, you know, all by sign language. But they would point out, like, there would be like a McDonald's or IBM sign, so landmarks. And so they taught me how to do it and get back home. So first day of school, Monday, you know, I've just yesterday got my how to get there lesson. So I get on the bus. What they didn't tell me, on Sunday, there's nobody that rides the bus. On Monday, I'm hanging out on that, you know, like the safety bars. I mean, the bus has got like, you know, it's like 50 people over the capacity, you know, and I'm hanging out the, but I get to school, and my notebook, I don't like carrying things, so I just threw it in my locker at school, and it had the only phone number of my American friend. That was the only place I had it, and I left it in my locker, but I thought, oh, I know how to get home, so I'm fine. 11:30 in the morning, I left to go back home. What they didn't tell me either was when there's a wreck, and this is true in most Latin American countries, when there's a wreck, nobody moves their cars until the police get there because of the insurance or no insurance and all that. So nobody moves anything. So everybody just kind of, you know, until the police get there and move the cars, nothing happens. So there was a wreck like 3 blocks before I was supposed to get off my bus. The bus stops, everybody gets off, and that's what they told me. When everybody gets off, you get off. So I got off. And you know when you're kind of stupid and dumb and you're lost? They told me, you know, after you get off, you go 100 north and 100 meters east. Okay. So I get off, as everybody, 100 meters, 100 meters. And there's no bus. Well, what do you do now? So, you know, when you're dumb and stupid, you know, you do that like 100 times thinking it's going to appear after about 10 and it never does. So I figured I'm lost. And I forgot the place where I live, and I knew it was San Rafael, and that's St. Ralph. But what they didn't tell me, there's like 15 St. Ralphs. There's St. Ralph of Arriba, you know, up, and there's St. Ralph of this town. And, you know, there's 15 different St. Ralph buses. So when I saw St. Ralph, I hop on the bus and I get on. I don't speak Spanish, so I get on and I'm lost. And I soon realize I'm going north when I wanted to go south. And when you're lost and you know, don't know what to do, you ride the bus until it stops. And then I got off and went back the other way, back to 11:30 at night. I'm still in San Jose, Costa Rica. You know. What 11:30? What is that? 12 hours, and I'm starting to panic. And back then nobody spoke English. Now today that would be totally different. So I'm kind of wondering what. And I've been through like the red district, and you know, ran out of that, and I'm lost, and I'm not sure what to do. And finally, I was going by a store, and the guy says, "Hey, you speak English? Oh, somebody speaks English." And I told him where I lived, and I got home about 12:15 at night. And I decided I was going to learn Spanish after that. I did not like that experience. So after, you know, 13 hours of being lost, that was pretty motivating to learn the language. So, and then my three kids were all born in Costa Rica, so they're pretty much, well, my son's here, he's bilingual, and 15. Okay, Andrew. Yeah, so they correct me all the time still. So, you know, after 20 some years, I'm not going to lose my accent, and I'm not going to always be perfect. So that's good. But thanks for coming, guys, and man, enjoy the rest of your time here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.